Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now, right now.
Now the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
Dr. Lisa, we not on for some reason. Okay. Hold on. It says open. Oh, Lord. Ain't that nothing? So that's it. The they're going okay. Yeah. Oh God!
Try to put your phone here.
No. It's fine right here. Yeah. Okay. We probably live now, Dr. Lisa. But yeah, we yeah. This is. Always something with the technology. So here we go.
Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, because I have you on the
let's do
another
it
mic.
Now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now.
Now we're down to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
That's right. We are going to do it right. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, wishing you a prosperous and happy new year. And we gonna make it better than 2024. And we are live from Harris Stowe State University, live on Black Radio Hall of Fame. And the opinions expressed on this show are not those of our sponsors. So that is what we say at the beginning, but we are happy to be here. We've been off for 2 weeks, and last show, which I think was December 18th, we said we were going to be trying something new, and we were going to try to go live on Facebook today, but it did not work out. So bear with us. I don't give up easily, as you well know, and so we're going to keep doing that, because what's missing from the show is people being able to interact with the guest. Sometimes that's not possible because the guests have been pre-recorded. But in this case, this was an intentional first show of 2025. And so I'm a bit disappointed that we weren't able to do that live. But I'd like to welcome Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick. And she's affectionately known as Dr. Lisa. And she's with a group that she founded called Grapevine, and it's a different kind of medical practice, and Dr. Lisa is a different kind of doctor. So Dr. Lisa, talk a little bit about Grapevine and what you do. And I just want to say, Dr. Lisa has these videos, she does a podcast, and she is on the street talking to people. And every time I think about that brother who you stopped on the street. You had previously talked to him about his medical condition. I think he was diabetic. And when he came out from the store, He had a bag full of goodies that were not good for him. And you start pulling stuff out of that bag. I said, oh, my brother didn't do right. He didn't do right by himself. So to me, that's the kind of intervention that we need to be doing in our community, Dr. Lisa. The traditional ways are not working for our people. So talk about what Grapevine does and what you do in particular.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Everybody remembers that story. I guess there's something about it that connects with people, huh?
Oh, yeah, it does, because all of us are guilty of saying, oh, I got this, I got that, and I shouldn't be doing this. And then counterintuitively, we go do something that is not in our best interest.
Yeah, it's human nature, right? You know, my guilty pleasure is Snickers. Mm. I've been eating Snickers since my father bought them for me when they were 25 cents in St. Louis. And I just, you know, they pack a punch when you're in a pinch.
Yeah.
But anyway, I am an infectious disease doctor, but I trained in public health. And what I'm most passionate about is helping people understand health information. So the reason I go on the street, I started going on the street almost 10 years ago now, just trying to hear from people about their frustrations and concerns about their health and healthcare. And I also wanted to learn, where are we going wrong in communicating health information to people? And that's why I created Grapevine Health. The reason it's called Grapevine Health is because, especially in the Black community, and probably some other brown communities, we get our information from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Grapevine. And sometimes there's a lot of great information on the Grapevine, but sometimes, especially when it comes to health and medicine, the information is incorrect. And so as long as we're on the ground listening to people, hearing what people understand, what they're confused about, we can have medical experts like me helping people understand and correct some of the misinformation. So that's what we're all about. We don't provide any medical advice to people. We don't practice. There are five or six other doctors who work with us at Grapevine. But we've thought about doing some street medicine, you know, just helping people do those basic screenings and get them to where they need to go to get follow-up. So, for instance, there are a lot of tests you could do on the street to check people out. Blood sugar, cholesterol, there's a kidney test now, blood pressure. So I think, you know, the more we're seeing a need for people to find things early, we might actually think about expanding to be more accessible for people to learn more about what's going on with their bodies. And the last thing I'll say is that I'm really discouraged by how many people die young in the Black community.
Mm.
I just saw, I'm in D.C. right now, and I just saw a news alert that one of our local reporters, a Black man, died of a heart attack. He was only 62. And we know him well. He's always out reporting on, you know, interesting stories. He grew up here. And to see that he has passed away from a heart attack, you know, most heart attacks are completely preventable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, it's important for us to figure out how to expand our work.
So let me
I appreciate you having me on.
No, I'm absolutely, I've been like thinking about the first show's got to be about health, because we are in bad health, and the year 2025 is going to pose a number of challenges that's going to provide more stress on our bodies. And so I know, and you've heard me say that, you know, good health is an act of resistance, and that's the way I look at it. So I'm not going into your damn medical industrial complexes, because I really don't trust them. Now, I have to use my own common sense about medications and that kind of thing, which I'm not on any, but I do take my booster shots for COVID. So, you know, when you were talking about the person in DC that died. Over the weekend, my sister had had to do a surprise, surgery, because she found out like 2 days before that 90% of her arteries going to her heart were clogged. She did not know that, and she's pretty good about health. She's a diabetic. She watches her food and all of that. And she had sometimes shortness of breath, but they were saying, the doctors that were working on her said that she should have been experiencing more pain in her chest, and she never did. So it was almost like a silent potential killer. But, you know, she had to get some veins from the legs and rebuild those arteries going into the heart. So, Lisa, is it not true that most black families got the big three hovering over them? And I'm talking about diabetes, heart disease, and high blood pressure. Have you found that to be the case?
I don't know. It's not our fate. And this is what I want people to understand, because I've had people tell me, well, it's just a matter of time before I get diabetes or sugar because it runs in my family. These health conditions can be stopped. They are preventable. These are lifestyle conditions that come about because of the things we eat, lack of activity. So finding out your blood pressure is a great start. If you haven't had a blood pressure check in a while, go get your blood pressure check. If you get a physical exam, they will draw blood, and this blood work can tell you what's going on with your cholesterol, what's going on with your blood sugar, what's going on with your kidneys and your liver. And it's just so important to know these things early. And I've heard a lot of people, you know, offer very, you know, explanations or excuses for why they don't go. It's too convenient. It's too inconvenient. I can't get an appointment. I don't want to hear any bad news. I'm afraid of what they're going to find. Or I don't trust them because they're just trying to pump you full of medicine and making up stuff so that they can make money. But ultimately, you have access to your information, and you can ask questions. So when you go and get the blood work done, don't just take the doctor's word for it. Look at your blood work with the doctor and have the person explain what's going on inside your body. And if they're giving you medicine, why are you giving me this medicine? What is this medicine? What is it supposed to do? How long am I going to be on it? So we have to get more active and curious about our own health conditions, because we don't have to die of diabetes and high blood pressure and heart attacks and stroke.
Yeah. You know, I get saddened and disappointed too, because at a certain point, you know, when I'm looking for obituaries for people who have died that I know, and I'm looking it up to share with other people, the deaths now are just all over the place. It used to be like, you know, you were old and, you know, you had lived your life and you were dying. But I'm seeing on these obits like 20-year-old, 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-olds. And and I'm thinking, wow, we got to get this health thing together. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Dr. Lisa, is the data came out, the research came out at the end of the year that I mean, we knew that the obesity rates had tripled over the last 50 years, but now the most recent survey says that nearly 3/4 of U.S. adults are overweight or obese. And then that's to me is like amazing. But all you have to do is go out in public at a restaurant or an airport and do some people watching, and you could say, yeah, that's probably true. But the downside of that is like that's almost $10 trillion in medical expenditures over the next year. And I just heard somebody complain about they got their blood pressure medicine, $1,000 for 3 months supply. Luckily, they don't have to pay $1,000. But, I mean, this medication is expensive, and you need it to live, at least live until you change your lifestyle. Talk a little bit about what obesity is and what morbid obesity is, because I think those really do we got to get a handle of that, because, you know, we've let it go too far. And I know that, you know, people say, hey, I'm only going this way once. I'm going to eat what I want and, you know, get that macaroni and cheese, eat that, you know, apple pie. But, yeah, it might mean that you're going to die, and we all will at some point. But it's going to be not a quality of life death, because I can't even imagine being on dialysis, where your whole life revolves around sitting in a chair and having your blood refiltered three times a week. So I just, you know, I think the whole thing about health and medicine, we haven't got a handle on it with our people yet, and we got to find a way to do that. That's why I love that you're on the street talking to people. And I guess I wonder sometimes if they really believe you're a real doctor, because who's out there with a white coat on and tennis shoes talking to people? So the obesity part, explain what that means and what it is and the implications of it.
Yeah, first of all, react to being on the street. You're right. People are often shocked that I'm a doctor, and I sometimes have to convince them. One day here in D.C., I stumbled upon some men who were talking in an alley, and I went over and struck up a conversation with them. And one of them said, "Who is she, man? Don't trust her. Like, doctors don't just walk around in the alley talking to people." So I had to actually pull out my credentials and prove to them I was a doctor before they believed me. Mm. So, but I think it just goes to show how we need to be more visible in community. Mm-hmm. So obesity is a tricky one, and it's a really complex subject because, you know, they keep changing. Well, actually, it's been the same for a while, but they're talking about changing the parameters to define obesity because they're really kind of unrealistic. If you just look at the chart, if you look at your height and weight and see if you're in the recommended range, then a lot of people by those standards would be obese. Morbid obesity is like people, the extra large sizes, right? So, and larger. The best way to describe it in terms of health issues, though, is a lot of people, they have what we call immobility, so it's hard for them to get around. And that causes lots of problems because one of the best things we can do to stay healthy or even get rid of diseases like high blood pressure and diabetes is to move. Mm. And if you are morbidly obese, it's difficult for you to move. And that can also be discouraging, and it also can weigh on you mentally. So a lot of people with morbid obesity also have some depression. Mm. But I think the big thing to talk about here, though, is there are a lot of reasons in our community why people don't have good health. And it's not just a matter of, well, people are making bad choices. I think we don't have the support we need in our communities to ensure that people can be healthy. Like, what are we doing in our communities to combat gun violence and other types of violence that discourage people from being outside? So when I grew up, you know, I grew up in near Jennings, and we were always outside. That was a different time. That was in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think kids who live in that area now, they're not outside so much. They're in the house, and then now we have technology. We have TV and streaming and all these other things competing for our attention, and so we might be less likely to think about exercise as a form of activity or entertainment. And that's really important. And so the more weight you put on, I think the more challenging it is, and for some people, the more discouraging it is, because they just accept their fate and say, well, I've always been big, or I'm always going to be big, or this is just how it is. But this is such an individual thing, and there's no one-size-fits-all solution because people have to be ready and decide for themselves they want to make a change. And the last thing I'll talk about is what I think is the most important, and that is what we put in our mouths. So what are we eating? But in a lot of our neighborhoods, if you go and walk around, you don't see a lot of stores that have wholesome, healthy food, fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh fish, lean meats, things that people can eat that would keep them healthy. We have a lot of corner stores, liquor stores, carryouts. These are foods that have high salt,
high sugar,
high saturated fat count. Mm-hmm. These are things that contribute to our high blood pressure and diabetes and cancer in some people. Also, smoking. Smoking is one of the worst things you can do if you are concerned about having high blood pressure, and smoking often leads to cancer.
And Dr. Lisa, this was one of the things when I talked to my sister's doctor, we did a FaceTime, and I said, is these clogged arteries a result of her diabetes? And he said, not really. She was a smoker. That's what you know, shrunk her veins and arteries. And, you know, my sister was an early smoker. She started smoking in high school, but she stopped when her granddaughter came on the scene because she didn't want that secondhand smoke affecting her granddaughter. So she stopped maybe 20 years ago, but I guess the damage had been done. So the smoking part of it, and I could just look at my own family, most of the folks who left prematurely were smokers.
Well, let's talk about what's happening when people smoke. So there are a couple things going on. So the nicotine in smoke, I mean, it's a chemical, and it causes the blood vessels to clamp down. And so if the blood vessels, you need as much space as possible to carry blood to different parts of the body, but if the nicotine is narrowing the space for the blood to carry, for the body to carry, the arteries to carry blood, then that can cause a problem. It can lead to high blood pressure. But when you have high blood pressure and the chemical reaction from the nicotine is actually damaging the inside lining of the blood vessel. And when that happens, when there's damage, it's just like if you scrape your knee or you cut yourself, you notice it'll bleed for a bit. And then your body starts to clog up the area and it stops bleeding, right? Mm-hmm. And then over time it starts to heal because things are happening to seal it off.
Mm-hmm.
So when all that commotion happens inside a blood vessel, it can lead to a clot because the body is sensing, okay, there's some damage. And so it sends all these helpers to the area to clean up the damage and stop the bleeding and heal it. But when that clot forms, that clot can actually flick off. And if there's already some what we call plaque, and plaque is just a buildup of cholesterol inside the vessels, all that stuff can get swept into the bloodstream and create a problem. It can cause strokes. It can cause other problems with your heart. But once, if that clot gets lodged and you have a lot of that plaque inside, it's just creating a traffic jam.
Mm.
And that's why people get the symptoms and have heart attacks, because it interrupts the blood flow. And a lot of this is reversible. If you have a heart attack, like you said, your loved one had surgery. So they just replaced those vessels. And so basically she's got a clean slate now. So it's up to her to decide, mm-hmm. okay, how am I going to keep these blood vessels clean now that I have new vessels
mm-hmm.
that came from her leg? But some people don't have to have surgery. They can have a procedure called an angioplasty. And that's, they insert a little balloon, and then they expand the balloon, and it crushes all the plaque against the arteries. And it opens up the space to let blood flow through. Sort of cleans it out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's different,
I mean,
from a stent, right?
There are things you can do. That's, well, no, they put a stent in.
Oh, okay. So it's the same.
Keep it open.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Mm. That's scary. But you know what?
It is.
While you were
we don't want people to go through these things.
No.
They can take control before any of this stuff happens.
And so while you were explaining that, Dr. Lisa, it made me think about one of the things I think is a major issue, particularly in the Black community, is that we don't know how our body works. We don't know the interconnections, how it functions, so that we can be more aware of the things that we do, the things that we take into our body. Because I'm convinced that, you know, when you start talking to people, they blink out. Like, if they can't see the harm that cigarette does to the lungs, then it's hard to convince them that something is happening. They literally can't see it. Now there's lots of videos out there that show what damaged lungs look like after you've been smoking for several years. But we are not learning that stuff in, like, middle and high school health-wise to say, hey, this is what happens. There are consequences when you don't exercise, when you eat all this salt, when you do this. But we just seem to be oblivious to the human body and what it takes to really keep it going.
But I think that, again, that's human nature. And so I think we do a good job rationalizing and saying, okay, I'm going to start tomorrow. I'm guilty of this.
But that's the people like you who already know better. But there's people who got blank stares on them when you start talking about, well, the reason that's happening to you is because of blah, blah, blah. Now, I have a few medical people in my family, so I can go by what some of their advice and wisdom that's been passed down. But most people literally don't know what causes their body to function on a daily basis. And so
how do you think we can get them information other than this radio show?
You know, I think what you're doing is fine, but I think part of it has got to be at an earlier age when these folks, and this is happening in, you know, suburban schools where they're teaching kids at, you know, in elementary school how to take care of their bodies. I mean, but a lot of the health classes in public schools have been eliminated. And so when you start talking about respiratory diseases or whether or not you should take a booster shot or, you know, inoculations or vaccinations, then people don't know how those work. And so then that allows a lot of conspiracy theories to impact their ability to make a decision. But I know even in terms of reproduction, there are a lot of people that don't know how babies are made. So I talk about
growth. But they know what to do to have a baby, even if they don't know that. Making a baby, right?
Yeah, that part. But sometimes you cannot have an unplanned pregnancy if you realize that, you know, something is going to be happening when that sperm meets the egg. I mean, you start talking about that, people glaze over. So I know that we haven't done a good job with our children. Because then the kids that I see who have a baseline understanding of that, they really do become advocates for their families. Like, mom, you shouldn't be eating that. And they've been able to change, you know, habits. Like, I don't want to eat meat anymore. And then somehow the family starts moving towards, like, more vegetables and fruits when they're cooking. So I know that kids have a profound and powerful impact on their families and their parents if they got the right information.
Yeah, and also the sustainability. Can people adopt these habits and keep it going? Because if you think about all the temptation we have around us when it comes to bad food, junk food, sugary beverages, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think we need some help in, you know, reining that in. Mm-hmm. Why is it when you go to the checkout counter at the grocery store and you're standing there waiting for your turn, you're surrounded by chips and sweets?
Mm-hmm. Those Snicker bars at this counter.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. It's such a challenge. It is. It's a challenge.
People want to be healthy, but I just feel like it's daunting for people, and you're right. We need to give them the information so that when they're ready, they can access it. Or even little things they can do, like drinking more water. Mm. If you only drink soda and you never drink water. Mm. Our bodies are made mostly of water, so we need to be making sure we're hydrated.
Absolutely.
Because not having enough water can affect your kidneys.
But see, here again is just drinking water. People saying that, people don't know the importance of water to the body. We never really learned that. A lot of the stuff I learned about my body and how to take care of it, I was grown. And it was also other people who were in the health profession that were helping me to understand it better so that I could be a good messenger. But this stuff, you know, water, you think, okay, people should know to drink water, but why? What effect does that have on the body when you don't drink enough water? We just don't know that. So, you know, I just love what you do, Dr. Lisa, on the streets. And I wish it was more people like that, because I think people need to come out of these clinics, even if you're not a bona fide doctor, but you're a healthcare worker. I mean, we used to have health outreach workers, you know, and they would be their particular focus would change based on what the need was. Because I remember in St. Louis, for example, during the AIDS epidemic, there were outreach workers who went out, you know, make sure people had clean needles and had information. And then, you know, when it shifted to something else like drugs, then they were outreach workers for that. But the budgets for these, you know, health departments have been decimated. And so the outreach workers aren't there anymore. And so what it means, though, is that now people are left to their own devices to find the information. And sometimes, as you said, we dependent on our friends, and they giving us, you know, information that somebody gave them secondhand. And, there's times when I hear people are taking other folks' medicine, and that just makes me really cringe, because you've said so many times everybody's body is different. And when you prescribe the medication, it's based on your body weight, size, whatever, you know, other medications you might be taking. And for somebody to say, hey, here, take one of my pills for that. Oh, that's just too damn scary.
This is a very common practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More than we want to admit. And I think the logic is, I know you well enough that when your symptoms are like my symptoms, you should just try this. Mm-hmm. There's not that much difference between you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there are so many people who believe the medications are not necessary and that they're only being prescribed so doctors and pharmaceutical companies can make money. And I think it's to the detriment of people's health, but also to trust in healthcare providers, because people need to be able to trust us to know that we are actually giving them these medicines because there's a true need for the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to work on that. And a lot of it does start with education, helping people understand the whys and the hows.
Mm-hmm.
Because too often people go to the doctor, and the doctor, you know, listens for a few minutes, starts typing on the computer, and then writes prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't actually ensure the person understands everything that's going on with their body. The visits are pretty short now, and so
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think this is also one of the excuses where we don't really have time to answer all those questions and be as detailed in the explanations, but you know, this is a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
You go and see a doctor. Like, we have to be working together to get the best outcome for you.
Yeah.
People have to ask questions.
And to make sure they do have a doctor that they trust. Because, you know, I trust my doctors because I've already done some research on them. But when my little tests come through my chart, I share with my family members who are in medicine, and I say, "What? Tell me what this is. I want to make sure it says what it's supposed to say."
Great line. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, because somebody knows how to read that and tell
you. How do you decide you can trust a doctor?
I was going to ask you the same question, because if the trust level is what's keeping us from being fully open to taking care of ourselves, how do we bridge that gap? And you know, this thing that just happened recently with the man killing the CEO of United Healthcare, for exactly the same thing that we're talking about. People have lost trust in the medical profession, which includes the insurance companies. And this was one of the United Healthcare was had the highest rate of denials, claim denials, in the country, and they have made, you know, gazillions off of people's premiums. So everybody, and we saw from the reaction that people that resonated. I mean, somebody's death. This is how sad and sick we are in this country. Somebody's death resonated with us, and we were like, yeah, they deserved it. Maybe now they understand. But that's not where I don't think we should be there. That's not going to help us.
But when you get it, let's say you get a new doctor and you have an appointment. What are you looking for to tell you you can trust this doctor?
Well, I'm looking for eye contact, and I'm looking for some not just, you know, pleasantry conversations. And I'm gonna tell you what happened. My primary care doctor was out when I went to my visit, and another doctor that works with her came in, and he came in rushing, and I said, you need to slow down. I said, I know you. No, I'm going to tell you. I said, you need to slow down. I said, I heard you in the room next door. I didn't hear all that you were saying, but I could hear your voice. And I appreciate you taking time with patients and talking with them. So you don't have, I've been waiting, yeah, but you don't have to rush in here and start, you know, moving things around. And no, we okay. I'm okay. I'm okay with waiting. So I just had, and he immediately, like, you could tell, he went to his zen level, because, you know, maybe somebody else would say, I've been waiting, like, you know, 30 minutes, blah, blah, blah. No, I want you to talk to people, because he's the kind of person I could tell that's going to explain to you what's going on and why. And so I did get all my lectures about, you know, eating and Mediterranean diets and all of that, you know, because he thought my blood pressure was a bit elevated. But for some reason, every time I go into that office, it elevates. I keep telling him, this is not my normal blood pressure.
We call that white coat.
Yeah. So he's going to attach some kind of device to me over a period of time to test that, to see if it is, because I'm telling him I get blood regularly because I'm O type, and my blood pressure is never too high for me to get blood. So I don't know what this is all about, but I don't have a problem with doing the, I forgot what it is, so I could ask you about it, the attachment that's going to monitor, you know, my blood pressure over I think it's a week or so, to see what's going on. But I don't think I have high blood pressure. I do have a monitor at home that I take every once in a while, and it seems to be normal when I'm at home. So I don't know.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Just give him the reading so that he can see.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the thing that I'm looking for. How are you interacting with me? And do you respect what I'm telling you? I'm giving you my symptoms, and I'm telling you what's going on. And I want some thoughtfulness coming out of your mouth, not just, as you say, go into that computer, and then next thing you know, I got three prescriptions. So, you know, they've been very good about that. You know, they haven't given me prescriptions for this, that, and the other. They, like, want to explore, watch, you know, listen to what I'm telling them. So, to me, that's important. I'm not a dummy. I might not be a doctor, but I do listen to my body, and I can tell you what it's telling me. I don't understand what it's telling me, and I need you to help me interpret that. So, yeah.
Well, how can you tell the doctor is respecting what you're saying?
Because they are responding or asking questions based on what I said.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, yeah. Okay, and when can you come back? No. Let's slow this train down.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and I don't like going to them. You know, they try to do, you need to come in here a couple of times a year. No, I don't. I'm coming once a year. So, you know, because let that be for the people who got chronic problems. I don't have any medical problems. You don't really need to see me unless something is going on. So we're going to do the once a year thing. So I think you have to really, like I said, know your body and know and be able to communicate with somebody who respects what you're saying. Now, if I was going in there and I got high blood pressure and, you know, borderline, what's that other stuff called? Cholesterol is high. And I'm saying, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. Now, I don't expect them to be complacent with that. I think they should be more assertive. No, Ms. Rogers, you know, here's what the readings are telling us. Your blood results is telling us this. So this is the things that you need to do differently. So I want them to push back, you know, but I also want them to be respectful of what I think is going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when you are talking with people and they're looking at you with a raised eyebrow, like, you know, what do you know? And particularly because you are black and female, and I'm saying that specifically because of those two reasons. Then how are you convincing people that you are knowledgeable and that you care about their health? Because I think that's also the missing piece for black folks, is like, they don't think these people care about them. It's just an assembly line of folks coming in, coming out, and as a checklist, and then you going on to go get your prescriptions.
Yeah, well, when people see me on the street, they automatically know I care. And people will thank me. It's, you know, it's not that often, but there are people who don't believe until I prove to them I'm a doctor. But that's not that often, actually.
Mm.
Because I also travel with an organ model.
Okay.
Which shows different organs in the body. Okay. And, I mean, who's going to be walking around with one of those? I think the other thing I notice is that people tell me things they wouldn't tell their own doctors because they don't know me.
Right. And you don't know their doctor, and so you're not going to report
right.
it.
Right. So there's a, you know, some instant trust.
Mm.
And this is usually with black people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, sometimes with Spanish-speaking people as well, but mostly, I mean, I'm in D.C., so I mostly do most of my outreach in black communities.
Yeah.
I think people appreciate the effort, but it just shows me how little this is happening inside the four walls of the healthcare system or a clinic. Because people just aren't getting their questions answered. They don't believe people have their best interest at heart because they think healthcare is all about money, not about people.
Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter, it is. And so I think part of the transformation is people like you that are saying, here's the profession, here's what I do. And that's very different from the mission. I mean, that whole thing of first do no harm, that's a crock, because most people know when you go in them damn hospitals, you may not come out. So I think, you know, for me, having trusted messengers like you are so important in helping to transform the way people look at medicine, the way they look at themselves. But also, you know, one of the things that you all have helped us to do is to look at the body more holistically. And so, are you still there, Doc?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard like a beep and like the phone was off the hook or something. But this whole holistic part of the body, like the mind and the physical and the mental, we tend to decompartmentalize that. And so what I've learned from messengers like you is, and you said an example of it, like when people are overweight, there could be some depression based on that situation. And so automatically we see the connection with the mental health. And all of that is health. You know, your mental health and your physical health are all together. And so there's been a number of studies around trauma and how trauma manifests itself in our bodies. Now, some of us who've been studying, you know, the enslavement of our people from day one and know that the trauma continued, but we did not necessarily have the clinical data to do that, and now they do. Now they're saying that the DNA is being reconfigured based on trauma. And so knowing this, Doc, what other kinds of things do we need to be doing to protect our mental health?
Well, I'm glad you're bringing it up, but, you know, mental illness and the things associated with it, like substance abuse, addiction to drugs and alcohol, these are not things we talk about in our community. And when we do talk about them, we sort of glorify it. I was just listening, I think it was Run DMC has a new
not new, actually, but he's on a mission to destigmatize mental health in the Black community. And he was talking about how we celebrate the bad things. So if someone is showing they can, you know, drink multiple shots, people are encouraging them on, like, go, more and more and more, rather than saying, hey, what's going on here? You probably should, you know, have no more than three shots. Like, why are you drinking so much? But instead, we encourage people in those behaviors. And he also mentioned how it's expected that you're going to smoke weed if you're in sort of a music environment. So these kinds of things, we just have to change our perspective on them because they can be very harmful for us.
Yeah.
I mean, and so once we have to decide that it's okay for people to ask for help and not make fun of people. Last year, actually, I was on the street and we were talking to people about mental health, and this young man said to me that he didn't believe in mental health because that was just something that's made up. It's for weak people.
Mm.
And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the people who act like they have a mental health issue, it's just because they're not strong enough to deal with their problem.
Mm. See what I mean?
And I'm thinking to myself, if this is the way we think about mental health in our community, like, we have a long way to go. And it has been stigmatized, you know?
Yeah.
Calling people crazy, talking about how people, you know, had to be institutionalized. We just haven't progressed as a community to accept that there's a lot of trauma in our community. Mm-hmm. And the way we have to deal with that is through therapy and getting support. But we're just not there. We're not even close, especially for men.
Right, right. But I do think that there is more, at least, visible messages and verbal messages and changing the narrative about it's okay to get help. Because one of the things I think helps is like we all have, particularly Black folks and folks of African descent, have went through trauma. And we get re-traumatized in the way that the capitalist society has us running around, you know, in stress all the time. And so we see those, that data come out even in infant mortality, that it's the same rate if you're middle class or poor. And that's because of the stress of living in America as a Black woman. So I try to destigmatize it by saying, these are the conditions that we are under, and it's not your fault. But what we have to do is to recognize what impact it's having on your body, but also we have to impact the systems of oppression that are causing you the stress and the pain and all of that. And one of the reasons I thought it was important to have you first, the first show of the year, is because when we look at the playbook that Donald Trump is going to use, it's going to cause considerable stress, emotional stress, financial stress. And so I think we got to get ready for that. Like, we got to protect ourselves, our families, and our communities. And part of it is knowing what's going to happen and start to, you know, build some kind of armor that's going to help us understand what's happening to us and why. Because I just, when I think about the financial stress, which often leads to a lot of other problems, including crime.
Yes. I think we have to build community. You know, find people we trust and people we can talk to when things get bad.
Right, right.
But you have to have those networks in place before the crisis comes. So that it's there for you. And if we're not spending or investing our time in building those relationships, especially for people who don't want to seek therapy, there has to be some other outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And then for those people who just don't want to talk to anyone, I think, you know, music, dance, exercise, there are other ways. Somehow it has to come out of the body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just want people to think about that. Like, what is their release when things get hard and tough and they're mentally strained? How are they letting go of that?
Mm.
And make a plan.
Yeah.
Get into a rhythm, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do something. Because it is. We're gonna have some bad days.
Mm-hmm. And more than one. And you know, this is going to be my mantra, Dr. Lisa, for the year, because I started at the end of 2024, is find your peeps, find your people, find folks mm-hmm. that you know and trust, because not just for the mental health, because that's going to be important, but we need to actively be organized and in our community so that we can put up some barriers to the harm that's getting ready to be done to us. And that's, you just can't sit back and meditate that away. That's going to call for some active, you know, organizing and agitating in our community. And so we just got to be ready spiritually, you know, physically and mentally for what we're going to lean into in 2025.
It's true, but I don't want to sleep on the meditation, whatever that is for someone, whether it's sitting cross-legged or taking a walk or praying.
Oh, and no, I wasn't
to balance out all that activism.
I know.
No. Activist all the time, because that's stressful too.
Yeah, no, believe me, I know, but and what I'm saying is sometimes people get caught up in the meditation, and that's all they do. And I'm saying that it's got to be more than that. There's got to be a balance of all of that. And I think that's the struggle for a lot of us, is finding that healthy balance so that we don't get sucked in to the abyss of depression and frustration and really don't become helpful for ourselves, our family, or our community. So, you know, my mandate is find your people, pick an issue that you feel passionate about, and let's start working on it, because we got people that are already in the White House that are not in our interest. And then in most states, like Missouri, have folks that are in the State House that don't have our interest. So we already are fighting uphill, and so we got to be healthy. We got to be strong. Yeah. So I, you know, my thing for you, doctor, is like, what are, I'm just going to say a list of stuff, but what are two things that you think we really should be concentrating on this year for ourselves that's going to make us more aware, make us more healthier? You got two or three things that could help us?
In the spirit of what you're just talking about with the political stress that's about to come, people have to make a plan to ensure they're not reacting to everything.
Mm. Pick and choose your battles.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And when you turn on the news and there's always some drama,
and you
allow yourself to react to all of that drama and internalize that, that's hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just creating a mindset for how you're going to control your response.
Okay.
So whatever is coming at us in the next 4 years.
Okay, I'm taking notes, because I'm gonna be saying this throughout. I'm taking notes. Okay, make a plan.
Mm-hmm. But I think the second thing is, people don't realize how our bodies and our minds respond to the things we put in it. Food and drink. We need to be mindful and figure out what are the things we can change. Do some experiments. So an example of this is, for me, I love desserts. And I realized that I had to change how much sugar I was eating, because I was getting close to pre-diabetes. But also, I have what I call food hangovers. And that is, you know, I go out to dinner the night before and I eat the molten lava chocolate cake with a scoop of ice cream. But when I wake up the next day, I feel a little bit like I've been drugged. Like I'm just a little slow, I'm dragging around. And so I did an experiment multiple times to see if it's really the impact of sugar, and it is. When I don't eat sugar, like cookies and candies and my Snicker bars and brownies and all that, and I stopped drinking soda and fruit juices in a jar years ago, so I don't have to worry about that. But all those things are added sugar that affect how we feel and how clear our brain is. And I notice when I take that out of my diet, it takes me about 3 days. I need less sleep. My mind is clear. I have way more energy. And you know, sometimes when you eat in the middle of the day, you need to take a nap. I don't feel tired in the middle of the day. Yeah, sugar is a drug too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I want people to think about what are those things they are consuming, whether it's something they're drinking, like these fancy coffee drinks you see, and even kombucha, which is being advertised as a health drink. Look at the bottle and see how many grams of sugar it has in it.
And what about those other,
grams of sugar a day, and even that is a lot.
And those energy drinks, too. I mean,
yes. Anything you're buying in the store and eating and drinking, you need to be reading the label and educating yourself on what you're putting in your body. And so that is the second thing I think people could try, because I think you won't notice it immediately on the first, second, or maybe even the third day, but after a week, you're definitely going to notice.
Well, it's interesting because I talked about my sister with diabetes who reads labels like religiously and now has me doing it. And I see how much sugar and salt is in these products that don't even really have to have it. I mean, why do you have to have sugar and ketchup? I mean, it gets to be ridiculous.
Because ketchup is sweet.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. It's a damn vegetable, okay? It's a fruit. Technically, it's a fruit. But, yeah, but some of these things, when you look at it, you see the high amount of sodium and sugar. So she has really helped me start reading those labels and putting that stuff back. She'll tell me this is how many grams you really should be watching for. And to me, it just seems like the food industry is flooded with that stuff and just making us sicker.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's not... It's hard because our palate, you know, the taste, we develop a taste for things. And that has to change over time. Yeah. It's not going to, because if, let's say you only drink whole milk, and then somebody puts a glass of skim milk in front of you, it's going to taste terrible to you,
yeah,
right?
I've tried that.
So we have to be patient and transition away from some of these things to cultivate a new taste, because you can do that.
Yeah. Well, in our last few minutes, Dr. Lisa, I want you to give people the website and also where they can find some of those informative but sometimes funny podcasts you do on the street. Yeah, can you give us those?
Absolutely. So you can go to YouTube and just type in Grapevine Health, like I heard it through the grapevine, like Marvin Gaye's song.
Uh-huh.
And you can find us on Instagram as well. And we actually haven't been making a ton of content for the public, but that's going to change this year. So people should subscribe to our YouTube channel so they can get notified and hit the bell so they'll see when we put up a new video, because some of the videos we're going to be doing are going to tackle some of these things we talked about today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And
so
if they have a question, they can also text us, so I can give you that number.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that in the webinar. Okay.
It's 202-702-8175.
Okay. Wow. You have given us so much, Dr. Lisa, and I know that you got so much more to give. So I appreciate you taking time off and letting the folks on the street, share you with us.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, thank you. And just a couple of announcements. Next week, just because we know that the Trump administration is focusing on immigrants. We got some people in here that are going to be talking about what it looks like for a mass deportation. It's on King's birthday, so we want to lift up his legacy, and it's not just about dreaming. If you want any of these shows that have happened in 24 or beyond, you can go to the website, JamalaRogers.com, and pick those up. This weekend, I'm doing a workshop on getting organized, to organize, because many of us know that it's rough. If you disorganize in your personal life, you really don't have time to do the work of liberation. And so I'm going to give you some tools to deal with that. But until then, be safe out there. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield.